All right, get ready, because today we are really going deep. We're taking a look at this epic showdown between Elijah and the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel. Using Dr. John Oswald's lectures on the Book of Kings, and let me tell you, this story really has it all. Drama, intrigue, you know, and some powerful lessons about faith.
You know what's interesting to me? It's how much the Bible really focuses on the events that happened before the showdown on Mount Carmel.
Right, right.
We've got a 3-year drought, like this huge power struggle between God and Baal, and it all leads up to this massive confrontation.
Yeah, it's like the calm before the storm, right?
Yeah.
Dr. Oswald calls it the law of proportion. Basically, the Bible really spends a lot of time setting the stage, like 19 verses specifically.
Yeah.
So that tells us, like, even the little details really matter if you want to understand what's really going on.
Yeah, exactly. It's not just about the spectacle, the fire from heaven. It's about the background, the context, like all this tension and drama that's unfolding. And it all starts with Elijah. He's not just some lone wolf prophet, right? He's following a direct command from God.
That's a good point. You know, it makes you think about what prophecy actually is, right?
Yeah.
Dr. Oswald talks about this difference between biblical prophets and the prophets you find in other cultures, you know, in the ancient Near East.
Yeah.
And he says it's not about being possessed.
Right.
It's more like a conversation, like this partnership between God and humans.
Right. More like how you talk with a good friend, a mentor, someone you trust. You listen, you talk back, you know, you act based on what you hear.
Yeah. Yeah.
That makes so much more sense than just being, like, a puppet.
Yeah. I love how Dr. Oswald talks about it. He says it's like God filling up a goblet, an ugly mug, with the same golden nectar.
I love that.
Right.
Absolutely. Because sometimes, you know, we might feel like that ugly mug, right? Like, we're not good enough. But it shows us that God can use anybody, no matter what. It doesn't matter how we see ourselves. It's a beautiful image of God's grace.
It really is.
Yeah.
But we can't forget, this isn't some abstract debate, right? There's a real crisis going on. 3 years of drought. So bad, even King Ahab and his prime minister, Obadiah, they're out looking for any scrap of land to feed their animals.
And it wasn't just a little dry spell. I mean, it was so bad that even the king himself was out searching for pasture.
Yeah.
And that's where we meet this fascinating guy, Obadiah. King Ahab's prime minister.
Right.
I mean, talk about a tough spot. Here he is serving a king who's all about Baal worship.
Yeah.
You know, this Canaanite god of rain and fertility.
Right.
But Obadiah, he secretly stayed true to the God of Israel.
Really makes you wonder, like, how do you keep your faith in a system like that?
I know, right.
I mean, he even hid 100 prophets from Jezebel. That's amazing.
It shows us that even when things are really dark, faith can still exist in the most unexpected places.
That's true. And his faith isn't just blind either. There's this moment where you really see how much he understands God. It's when Elijah asks him to tell Ahab that he's back. And Obadiah's like, wait, what? I don't know where the Spirit of the Lord might take you after I leave.
Yeah.
He's worried he won't be able to find Elijah later.
Yeah, that's so key. It shows us that Obadiah gets it. Like, he understands that God is consistent. Yeah.
Right.
But also that he can be unpredictable. You can't just, like, put God in a box or try to control him.
Totally. Which leads to Dr. Oswald's point about God having a very low boredom level.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
God's not going to repeat himself.
No.
He's always creating, always surprising us.
Right.
And it really highlights that difference between the God of Israel and Baal.
Absolutely.
Baal's this predictable earthly power, all about the seasons, the harvest.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But God... God is on a whole other level.
Totally.
He goes beyond anything we can imagine or understand.
Right.
And then we have Elijah. He's totally committed to God. Even though he knows Ahab wants him dead.
Yeah.
He makes a promise, swears he'll confront the king. He's putting all his trust in God.
I mean, that's some serious courage. But it's not just blind faith, is it?
Right.
It comes from his experience with God, right? He's seen how God works in the past.
Yeah.
It's that deep relationship with God that gives him the strength to face danger.
So here we are. The drought is crippling everything. Faith is being tested. And Elijah, following God's command, is about to face off with Ahab and 450 prophets of Baal.
It's a clash of worldviews, really. Who is the true God? We've seen hints of his character through Elijah and Obadiah. But on Mount Carmel, that truth is going to be revealed in a way that no one can deny.
So are you ready to see how this showdown unfolds?
Let's go.
Okay, so we've got this huge showdown about to go down on Mount Carmel.
Yeah.
It's more than just a personal rivalry.
Right.
It's like these two totally different ways of looking at the world.
Yeah.
On the one hand, you've got Baal, this god of fertility and rain.
Yeah.
But he seems to have kind of abandoned his people during this horrible drought.
Right.
And then you've got the God of Israel, the one Elijah's saying is the true God.
And what I find so interesting here is how Elijah sets this whole thing up.
Yeah.
He doesn't just want to argue, right?
Right.
He wants the evidence to prove who's right. So he challenges the prophets of Baal to this public, like, power display.
Yeah. He's like, all right, let's see what your God can do.
Exactly.
And the challenge is pretty simple. Each side gets a sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
Then they call on their God to send fire from heaven to burn it up.
And you can just imagine the tension building as the prophets of Baal start doing their thing. They're chanting, dancing, you know. They're even cutting themselves trying to get Baal's attention.
Wow.
But nothing. Silence. I mean, doesn't that just show you how powerless Baal really is?
Totally. If your God can't even send a spark during a drought that's affecting the whole nation, you got to wonder if you're on the right side, you know?
Right.
And Elijah, well, he's not going to let this opportunity pass him by. He starts making fun of them.
Oh, yeah. He totally mocks them, saying things like, maybe Baal's sleeping. Maybe he's on a trip. Maybe he's just too busy to answer you.
Right.
It's funny, but it also really hits home.
Yeah.
He's pointing out how misplaced their faith is.
It's like in The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
When they finally see that the wizard is just some guy behind a curtain.
Right.
The illusion is shattered. But then Elijah gets ready to set up his own altar.
Yeah.
And he does something really interesting.
What's that?
He uses 12 stones, one for each of the 12 tribes of Israel.
Oh, wow.
It's like the subtle symbol of the whole nation united under the one true God.
I like that.
Yeah. And it's not just Elijah versus the prophets of Baal, you know.
Right.
It's the God of Israel versus these fake gods.
Yeah. And to make things even more dramatic, he tells the people to soak the sacrifice and the wood with water.
Really?
Not once, not twice, but three times.
He's not messing around.
No, he's not.
Oh.
He's making sure there's no way anyone can say, this is a trick.
Right.
No smoke and mirrors here.
It's the real deal.
And then he prays, and fire falls from heaven.
It burns up the sacrifice, the wood, even the stones and the water in the trench. I mean, there's no denying it. This is divine power.
That's amazing.
And the people, they all fall to their knees and shout, the Lord, he is God, the Lord, he is God.
It's like the ultimate mic drop moment.
Totally.
The difference couldn't be more obvious.
Yeah.
On one side, nothing.
Yeah.
Emptiness, desperation.
Yeah.
And on the other side, this incredible display of power.
Mm.
You just know God is there.
It's a turning point for Israel, right?
It really is.
It reminds them of their special connection with God.
And for us, you know, I think it shows us that the God we worship is not just some far-off, uninvolved being.
Right.
He takes action.
Yeah.
He reveals himself in ways we can't even explain.
Yeah, that's so true. It's really interesting, though. Even after this amazing show of power, Elijah doesn't just stop there.
No.
He tells the people to arrest the prophets of Baal,
mm-hmm.
and they're executed. It's a pretty intense turn of events. It is, and I think that part of the story can be hard for us today to understand. You know, it brings up questions about justice and mercy,
right?
And what a prophet's role is in society. But it's important to remember the context, right? Back then, idol worship was everywhere. It had corrupted everything, morally and spiritually.
Yeah, and the Bible says that idol worship wasn't just a personal belief. It was like a threat to the whole community.
Exactly.
It was seen as going against God.
Yeah.
And the consequences were serious.
Yeah. So in that time and place, what Elijah did, even though it was harsh, was seen as a necessary step to bring back order and uphold their covenant with God. It's definitely a complicated issue. One that we need to think about carefully.
Yeah.
But what's clear is that what happened on Mount Carmel changed Israel's future. It was this huge wake-up call. The choices they made, the gods they followed, it all had real consequences.
Really makes you think, huh. I mean, we might not be building altars and offering sacrifices these days.
Right.
But this story still feels like super relevant to us today.
Oh, totally.
It's like it's asking us, what are our own Mount Carmel moments?
That's a great way to put it. What are those things we might be tempted to worship in our modern world, you know?
Right.
Things like success, money, what other people think of us. And how do we stand strong in our faith, like Elijah did, when it seems like everyone else is chasing after something different?
Yeah, those are some tough questions.
Yeah.
It's so easy to just get caught up in everyday life and lose sight of what's really important. But hey, before we finish up, I gotta ask about the rain.
Oh, yeah, of course.
The drought was, like, the whole reason this showdown happened in the first place, right?
Exactly. After the prophets of Baal are taken care of, Elijah heads back up to Mount Carmel.
Okay.
And he prays for the drought to end. And this time, he doesn't just pray once and that's it. He tells his servant to go and look towards the sea, like, 7 times before a tiny little cloud shows up on the horizon.
7 times. He didn't give up.
Nope.
Makes you think about how easily we give up when we don't see an answer to our prayers right away.
I know, right? Think about a time when you really needed something and you prayed about it. Did you ever feel like just quitting when nothing seemed to be happening?
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of like that with Elijah and the rain. But you know what? His persistence pays off. That small cloud turns into this huge downpour, ending the drought and bringing life back to the land.
Shows that sometimes the breakthrough comes after waiting, after praying, even when we don't see any changes happening.
Yeah.
It's like our faith, like that tiny cloud, can release God's power in ways we never expected.
Exactly. The story of Elijah on Mount Carmel is a reminder that even in the middle of a drought, there's always hope for rain.
So much to think about in this story. So many layers. It reminds us that God is in charge even when things feel out of control. He answers prayers, shows himself to those who are looking for him, and ultimately brings justice and makes things right again.
Absolutely. And I think it leaves us with this one final thought to chew on. You know, as you think about your own life, what are some of those things you might be tempted to worship, those false gods? And how can this story help you stay focused on what's truly important?
Thanks for listening.